This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they may live upon the earth. Today, I'm going to discuss publicly the Ron Paul campaign. And I'm going to discuss exactly what I believe that Ron Paul must do to win the campaign ahead. The first two Republican delegate contests are now over, and in spite of an unfair playing field created by the political and media establishment, Ron Paul's vote has been very disappointing. After all, as he himself has pointed out, no Republican or even Democratic candidate has raised more money in the last quarter. Even more tellingly, Ron Paul's fundraising has been very similar to my own political races in that he's had many more contributors than the other candidates, but like my campaigns, he's not had as many big ones. Yet his campaign has not nearly generated the much higher percentage of votes that I received in my major races. More contributors generally mean more grassroots support and an army of committed volunteers, yet all of Ron Paul's support has resulted in far fewer votes for Congressman Paul than what one would expect. Remember that in Louisiana, outspent 50-1 in political advertising, and with a media establishment pulling out all stops to paint me as irredeemably evil. Somewhere between public perceptions of Attila the Hun and Adolf Hitler, and after I endure the most vicious media attack campaign in American history, I still received over 60% of the white vote in elections for Louisiana's two highest elected offices, governor and United States senator. Although it might surprise many who are reading this, even before I began my political rise in Louisiana, I actually won the New Hampshire primary for Vice President of the United States with over 65% of the vote. Here's a direct quote from the January 8, 2008 issue of the Toronto Globe and Mail newspaper on my successful electoral foray into the far northern state of New Hampshire. And I quote, "Voters not registered with any party can choose to vote in either the Republican or Democratic primary, but not both." Subtitle, Vice Presidential Primary. New Hampshire is the only state that includes a choice for vice president, though it has no bearing on anything. Usually, the winners are presidential hopefuls who get write-in votes as vice president. Past winners include Dick Cheney, Al Gore, Colin Powell, and David Duke. Patsy Buchanan, with far less money than Ron Paul, won the New Hampshire primary in 1996. So before I begin my suggestions for the Ron Paul campaign, let me first say that I like Ron Paul's campaign, and I think it's good for America and for the political process in this country that he is running for president. Why do I think so? It's because people such as Ron Paul shake up the system. And Paul does take a lot of correct positions, such as opposition to the Iraq War, opposition to foreign aid to Israel and to the rest of the world, and as well, he takes an unrelenting position supporting the civil liberties of the American people, liberties that are under attack by an ever-expanding and repressive federal government. Second, what I say here cannot hurt the campaign and the liberal media because I now will offer some criticisms showing that I think Ron Paul does not do enough to defend the heritage and the interests of European Americans. Now that Ron Paul's doing quite poorly in some of the election contests, I feel it's imperative that I speak out and express my opinion of how he can receive more votes. So what happened to Paul in New Hampshire? A state that has a very conservative, even libertarian record. The only state that's refused to enact even a seatbelt law, and a state where Patrick Buchanan and I did very well. In my opinion, Ron Paul has the right position on the Iraq war, foreign interventionism and foreign aid and monetary policy. He also has the right position on American rights and freedoms. But Paul has not been vocal enough on the issues that matter most to the American people, such as immigration, affirmative action, the effects of welfare, and medical care for working Americans. And Ron Paul has had a dead wrong opinion on foreign trade in supporting a libertarian policy that basically favors open trade, rather one that would protect American industry and labor. These are issues important to the overwhelming European-American majority of the electorate in Iowa, in New Hampshire, and in the United States as a whole. Patrick Buchanan and I both have opposed American empire and supported an American republic, just as Ron Paul does. But we were also identified closely with our commitment to European-American heritage, traditions, and freedom. Ron Paul has mostly focused on his message on the Iraq War and his hard money monetary policy. Even in dealing with Iraq, Ron Paul has not tapped the real anger of the American electorate. The great sin of the Iraq War to most people is not that it is clearly unconstitutional, which of course it is unconstitutional. Perhaps even a president ordering nuclear attack on a nation that's launched nuclear missiles against us might be technically unconstitutional because only Congress can declare war. But Americans, by probably 90%, would want the president and the world to know that if we fell under nuclear attack, that our president would respond immediately and decisively. The Iraq War, of course, posed no imminent danger, and the constitutional violation is clearer than the hypothetical scenario I just mentioned. However, the greatest evil of the Iraq War is far more the fact that it's a war against every true and real interest of the United States of America. It's a war based entirely on lies. It's a war for Israel, led by Jewish extremist neocons and their allies in media. It's a war that has killed over 3,500 of our young military personnel and wounded or maimed at least 50,000 more. It's a war that will cost us trillions of dollars and spur increasing hatred and terrorism against Americans and unrelenting damage to American economic interests. This war is a war against America. How can anyone run for president of the United States and not mention the overwhelming power of the Israeli first Jewish extremists in American politics and media? Everyone in Washington, D.C. and in practically the entire world knows that the political fundraising process, presidential policy, and congressional process is firmly under the control of the Zionists, who are using the United States as its worldwide hitman. And that's a role that's doing America irreparable harm. Jewish extremists are the political fundraisers and power brokers, and they also dominate the mass media, the single greatest influence in politics. If I were Paul, I'd also cite the Constitution in answer to attacks by other Republicans that opposition to the war is unpatriotic. But my response would be first to forcefully say, you who support sending our boys to death or worse, for a lie created by a fifth column in the United States and against the interests of the United States by supporting the Iraq war, you're doing more than being unpatriotic. You're committing treason to the American people. I like Ron Paul's laid-back country doctor persona, but the man has to get a little less cerebral and a lot more powerful in his interviews. You can't weasel. You have to show strength as a president. You must be polite and gentlemanly, but when people take cheap shots at you, you have to come back at them just like I did against Wolf Blitzer on CNN. Now, here's what Ron Paul said on Jay Leno in response to the Fox News, excluding him from the major debate in New Hampshire the night before the election. Quote, Ron Paul, "You know, I don't know. I can speculate. If I qualified, as you point out, that I had the qualification, it must be they didn't want to hear the message. Maybe they're intimidated. Maybe they're frightened. Maybe they don't want to hear the truth. Who knows? We'll have to figure that out." Jay Leno, "Okay, I mean, what do you do? Do you call Fox News at this point and go, 'I want to know why I was excluded?'" Ron Paul, "Yeah." Jay Leno, quote, "You seem like a gentleman. You don't seem like that type, but it seems like you should be kicking somebody's ass right now," unquote. I agree with Leno's response, and I would have said something similar to the following. "Fox News and the whole country know that I'm qualified to be on the debate after getting more votes than debate participant Giuliani in Iowa and outpolling Thompson here in New Hampshire. They don't want me on because they don't want anyone exposing their nonstop lies about Iraq and American foreign policy. But there's one good thing about the debate exclusion in that they have exposed the bias and truly anti-American bias of this powerful media." The American people want a fighter, and they don't want a bully or someone always sniping, but they do want someone who fights back when attacked. And once you are attacked, again, using the example of Wolf Blitzer's attack against me last year, the audience gives you the emotional and psychological right to respond in kind. In fact, most people expect a man who's unfairly knocked down to get up and beat the attacker to a pulp. Audiences see a soft response as weakness on your part. Once Blitzer came at me like an attack dog, I told Blitzer that the reason he was so unfairly attacking me is because I oppose Israel's control of American foreign policy, and then I pointed out that he was an officer of AIPAC and that he's not an honest journalist, but an agent for Israel. Nobody has ever told that truth about Blitzer to his face on national television before, and 25,000 people emailed me with applause, and millions watched YouTube copies of this program because of the interest and enjoyment of seeing an underdog come out on top over a biased media bully. Another issue that gives Paul no great political leverage is the hard money issue that he spends most of his time talking about. He wants paper money to be backed by gold or some other hard commodity. Now, the average voter just doesn't give a damn about economic theory. What they do care about is the quality of life they have for themselves and their families. The truth is that I agree with Paul that hard money leads to a more stable monetary system and is preferable. But many nations, such as Switzerland, do not have such a policy and yet have done extremely well for generations. Germany, in the 1930s, based their currency on labor rather than gold, and with sound economic policies, still escaped the Depression in only 3 years, while the rest of the world languished. America, without hard money, had the fastest growing economy in the world, in history, in the years following World War II. And that occurred despite massive stealing and fraud by both the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government hucksters. Even with our flawed monetary system and the corruption of the Federal Reserve. We would have saved trillions by avoiding foreign interventionism after the fall of the Soviet Union. And if we would not have launched the Iraq War, we could have easily saved enough money to abolish the federal income tax. Now, that's not even counting the equally huge savings we would have reaped by stopping illegal immigration and by taking measures to slow the growth of the welfare underclass. If one adds up the costs of the rising immigration and welfare underclass in the United States, there is nothing that is more financially detrimental to the American people. It reflects huge education costs, staggering costs from crime against individuals, people. When you murder someone or put someone in the hospital, you destroy tremendous wealth in society. It entails the costs of police, courts, and prisons, and we have the greatest and the largest prison population in the world right now in the United States. It entails expanding public entitlement programs, and it entails incredible medical costs. The medical costs of millions of illegal immigrants who have paid no taxes, as well as the welfare recipients who aren't paying taxes, are borne completely by the taxpayer and the medical care providers. So working people who pay for their medical care, whether by direct payment to the doctors or to the hospitals, or by payment for medical insurance, they end up paying exorbitant rates because hospitals and medical institutions must factor in the free care that they must provide for those who don't pay. A good example of the economic impact of the changing demographics of America is the rising cost of medical care and medical insurance, to the point that millions of working American families cannot get or afford medical insurance and face economic ruin and bankruptcy if their family suffers a serious medical problem. Ron Paul has a big war chest, as big as any candidate. What would I do if I were in his shoes? Well, here's some of the issues that I would talk about. There are many issues, and I don't have the time or space to mention here, but a few of the points I would emphasize if I were his campaign manager are the following. Number one, I would hit the Iraq war harder. I would show shocking pictures of our dead and maimed military personnel and get angry and emotional that these patriotic Americans and their families have endured these terrible consequences because of lies by both politicians and media. I'd point out correctly that a truly patriotic president would not let such atrocities continue another moment. Two, I would hit immigration harder, and not by commercials as Paul did in New Hampshire showing some anchor babies in hospitals. People tend to feel naturally sympathetic to babies and mothers. Show pictures of the many illegal alien criminals who have raped, kidnapped, and killed American citizens. These are illegal aliens our government has not prevented from entering our country. Show how the politicians who have not done their constitutional duty to enforce our laws are directly responsible for the murder of these innocent Americans. Show the pictures of these men and women in these commercials and hit this issue hard. Three, expose and hit the massive racial discrimination against European Americans in so-called affirmative action and the bald-faced lies of equal opportunity. The EEOC, for instance, is not an, quote, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. It is an agency solely dedicated to racial discrimination against better qualified white applicants. Companies owned by white people, employees, and students. We must demand true equal rights for all and that the best qualified get the job, contract, promotion, scholarship, or college admission by their merit. And that's not going on in the United States of America today. 4. Even if Ron Paul supports free trade by some libertarian principle, at least he should emphasize that any country that does not allow truly free access to our products and services, such as China, should be barred from our markets and our own self-defense. 5. He should call for protection of our technical class by absolutely prohibiting large companies from outsourcing American technical jobs to the sweatshops of India or elsewhere. Additionally, he should demand that American citizens are given first and foremost preference at admission to American universities. And 6, the first step in medical reform and medical insurance is giving American citizens who are workers and lifelong taxpayers, people who are retired, who've paid taxes all their lives, these people must be given preference, first preference, in medical care and services. No taxpaying American person who suffers a costly, life-threatening illness in his family should face bankruptcy or loss of his home while even one illegal alien gets free medical care. I want Ron Paul to do well for a number of reasons. This is because I share his positions on the Iraq War and American foreign policy, that he believes in less government and more freedom, and the fact that he staunchly believes in preserving the civil liberties and constitutional rights of the American people. I recognize as well that he does not share my view of the most important issue of all, the preservation of the heritage and rights of the European American people. I am an American who believes that the United States of America, our principles, our Constitution, our rights, our freedoms, our liberty, our prosperity, is inseparably bound up with the European American people. That our people have a right to survive, to live, and have a society that evokes our traditions and values, the high moral principles of our forefathers, and that offers our children possibility in the future. If we lose the European American people in America, I know, as so do millions of other European Americans in our country, we lose America. Paul would never voice that kind of opinion, even if he might share it deep within his heart. But I do believe that his process in the political primaries and on some of the key positions that I've outlined, these would be good things for European Americans and indeed for all Americans. I recognize, too, that the better he does, the better it is for our people and all people that love freedom. And I know the better he does, the more it shakes up and opens up American politics. So far, he has gotten far fewer votes than our hoped expectations. He only got about 8% in New Hampshire, even behind Giuliani. Perhaps the key to getting more support is contained in Paul's own writing, as shown in his previous newsletters that he sent out from his Houston, Texas base. Recently, James Kirchick published an article in the far leftist New Republic called Angry White Man, The Bigoted Past of Ron Paul. This was posted January 8, 2008. Kirchick points out that Paul had this to say about me in the 1990 period, shortly after my race for the U.S. Senate. It should be noted that I've never tried to improve my status by previously publishing or remarking about the positive things that Paul wrote about me and about my campaign issues. In fact, some people may have thought they would hurt his campaign. Well, what Paul wrote about me, though, is now public knowledge, so I think that I can mention it as well. It's not going to make any impact on his campaign. The New Republic published this, and since it's known by the media, I'm going to quote it so that you can hear these words for yourself if you haven't heard them already. Quote, this is from Ron Paul's newsletter in 1990. David Duke received 44% of the vote in the Senate primary race in Louisiana, 60% of the white vote. Actually, it was a little higher than that. And 9% of the black vote. Actually, it was a little lower than that. It was probably around 4% of the black vote. This total, 100,000 more votes than the current governor when he won. Duke lost the election, but he scared the blazes out of the establishment. If the official Republican wouldn't have been ordered to drop out, Duke might have won. Certainly, there would have been a runoff. Duke's platform called for tax cuts, no quotas, no affirmative action, no welfare, and no busing. To many voters, this seemed like just good, plain sense. Duke carried baggage from his past. The voters were willing to overlook that. If he'd been afforded the forgiveness an ex-communist gets, he might have won. David Broder, also of the Post and equally liberal, writing on an entirely different subject, had it right. Quoting Broder, "No one wants to talk about race publicly, but if you ask any campaign consultant or pollster privately, the sad reality is that many working class and middle class white Americans are far less hostile to the rich and their tax breaks than they are to the poor and minorities with their welfare and affirmative action programs." Paul again, liberals are notoriously blind to the sociological effects of their own programs. David Duke was hurt by his past, but how many more Dukes are waiting in the wings without such a taint? And here's a direct quote from The New Republic. Again, The New Republic, Angry White Man by James Kirchick. An article entitled Duke's Victory, a newsletter celebrated, this is Paul's newsletter, celebrated Duke's 44% showing in the 1990 Louisiana Senate primary. Duke lost the election, it said, but he scared the blazes out of the establishment. In 1991, a Paul newsletter asked, "Is David Duke's new prominence, despite his losing the gubernatorial election, good for anti-government, anti-big government forces?" The conclusion was that our priority should be to take the anti-government, anti-tax, anti-crime, anti-welfare loafers, anti-race privilege, anti-foreign meddling message of Duke and enclose it in a more consistent package of freedom. So, my friends, what must Paul do to have any real chance of winning or making a bigger impact? I believe he should do exactly what I did in Louisiana when I ran and won over 60% of the white vote in two major elections. What I did in New Hampshire when I won the vice presidential nomination. Ron Paul needs to follow exactly the same advice that he himself gave in his newsletters for other people to read. Take up my campaign issues with passion and purpose. Ron Paul still has a lot of money in the bank. There are major primaries ahead. Let's encourage him, those of us involved in the Ron Paul campaign, to come out and hit hard for the issues that will motivate the great mass of the American people to vote for Ron Paul and remove the bums and the traitors who are running the government of the United States of America. Thanks so much for being with me. I appreciate all of your support and well wishes. I hope all of us will continue to work every day for the heritage and the freedom of our people. The reason why I'm talking about this campaign and discussing it is because this campaign offers a tremendous opportunity for our people to educate millions of Americans about the government, how the biased media works, such as in the Fox barring him from the campaign, how they taint these campaigns, and learning how the political establishment works against truth and freedom and justice in almost every respect. Paul's campaign is for the first time energizing many people around the United States who've not been involved in politics before. And you know what? We must get involved in the political process if we're going to win victory for our ideas and principles and philosophy. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's encourage Ron Paul to talk about the same issues he talked about in his newsletter of a few years ago. And let's encourage him to learn from my campaigns in the way that he can mobilize great numbers of voters and stand out from all the other Republican and even Democratic candidates. Thanks so much. I look forward to being with you very soon. Please remember that this program is supported by you. You make this program possible. We need your financial support, and we need you to get on your computer, keyboard right now, send links of this program to your friends across America, across the world, and help bring more people to these truths. Thanks so much. I'll be with you again soon. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast.